Right, well, meanwhile, back at the plot. You people very kindly, and I'm very grateful, as per our first session, wrote down a whole bunch of questions, which I find useful because it gives a feeling for what you're wondering and what your own personal mission is. And I'll try and work in some of those. Not every single one, but I'll try and cover the ones that I think are relevant. Where to begin? I'm going to use metaphor. And the reason why I use metaphor is because you guys are into the internet and Miles and his team over there will be aware that these days you are living in the world, the cyber world of big tech and algorithms. Algorithm is a piece of software that interrogates something without any human hand being involved and looks for certain keywords. And if you have a piece on the internet, a web page or YouTube or Facebook, and you use the wrong keyword that is not on message, you will get your channel taken down, or you'll get deleted for a week, or you get banned or something, because big tech is a mechanism that now can censor very effectively what you are given as information. The BBC, British Broadcasting Corporation, I won't swear, I used to work for the BBC once. We actually won the Royal Television Society's Award for Regional Television in the team that I was on, which was in News and Features, which I was rather proud of at the time. We even did UFO stories on the BBC in those days. And I also made programs about reincarnation. But that's another story. Now, I'm going to use metaphor because I've just explained you're going to have to use your little grey cells. Sometimes I will be able to say something, but I won't be able to say the name because the algorithm will say, oh, he's gone off message, and the guillotine will come down. Einstein said you measure a circle starting anywhere. So we'll start anywhere. Georgia Guidestones in Georgia, USA. I'm sure you've heard about the Georgia Guidestones. They appeared rather mysteriously with a set of possibilities or expectations on population and way of running the world. And they were made out of granite. They're rather beautifully made. And they're erected there. And they've been there for a very long time. People have studied the Georgia Guidestones and people have different opinions on them. But the interesting thing is that in the last period of time, since I spoke last, which was in, I think, with Kerry Cassidy in January of 2020, the Georgia Guidestones got blown up. They actually got blown up with dynamite. And the sheriff, because about three or four of them went down, came along and he said, oh, well, the others are looking unsafe. And he got in touch with the owner and said, what do we do? And he said, oh, well, if they're unsafe, we better demolish them because, you know, they might fall on somebody and kill somebody. So the bulldozers came in, I think, within about 24 hours, and they demolished. I read this story with some interest because I'm interested in the Georgia Guidestones and what it pretends to state about the potential future of the Earth. And a name came up, Larry Silverstein. And I thought, I know that name, because it sort of rang a bell. And this New York businessman, quote unquote, had bought the Georgia Guidestones not that long previously to them being demolished. And he had insured them for an extortionate amount of money. And he had also made a point of saying in this insurance, paying extra, that if there was anything like a terrorist incident or an unfortunate military incident, or any kind of possibility, that this would also be covered. You have to pay extra for this kind of insurance. You'll probably find if you read your own insurance policies, whether it's on your cars, your houses, or anything else, that it excludes things like terrorism and military action and war and what have you. You're not insured for that. But no, he paid extra for this. And dear Larry, who's now 91, got rather a good return. He's still fighting in court over the fact that his newly acquired Georgia Guidestones have been blown up. And there's some suspicion as to who instructed them to be blown up. I can't say any more on that. And I thought, I know that name. And then I thought, he was the guy who had the head leased of the Twin Towers. And you know what? Larry is psychic because 3 months before the Twin Towers mysteriously fell down, he'd insured them against terrorist action and war and paid a lot of money for the extra insurance, which must have been a very bad investment because he got paid a very large amount of money for the demolition of the Twin Towers. And very strangely, again, in psychic intuition, it seems that an architect had been instructed before the demolition of the Twin Towers to possibly craft a design for a replacement to the Twin Towers, which happened to have a lot of asbestos in them. And asbestos is a very, very difficult and toxic substance to remove, especially in demolition. Now, I always find in these stunts, and I use the word advisedly, there is always a multiple feedback. There's a multiple win-win. It's very, very well thought out. It's a brilliant operation. Because underneath the three buildings, because there was another one that went down apart from the Twin Towers, there was a very large vault. And in this very large vault, there was a lot of real gold, the actual metal. And we're talking a very, very large amount of gold. Now, when they eventually demolished and did the clearance of the site of the Twin Towers, and they dug down for some considerable time, it took them a long time, they shipped all the metal off to China very, very quickly, which is strange because there could be no forensic analysis of that metal if it was all gone off to China and was making your goodies that you buy from China. And they found that the vault was nearly empty and the gold had mysteriously disappeared, except for one 38-ton truck, which was half out of the vault loading bay, which had a bit of gold in it, which obviously in this course of this very, very generous and intuitive removal of the gold, they hadn't quite lifted it out completely in time. It's very heavy stuff, gold. And they got tired and they realized, oh my God, we're getting a bit, we better get out of here now. These are coincidences, you understand. I'm not implying anything by this. Nothing at all. I'm just saying that these things strangely occur. And like, for example, 3 days before the Twin Towers came down, a team came in and replaced all the fire extinguishers that happened to be on the main supportive columns. Now, a fire extinguisher in that building is a large thing. It's one of the big fire extinguishers. It's not a little thing that you stick in your car. And this particular team, I use the word again, advisedly, took a video of themselves actually doing this because they had to show that presumably they'd done a very good job. The United States used to use shells which had small atomic weapons in them. They're quite small. You can make an atomic weapon now very, very small, very precise. Use plutonium. And don't use the old method. The old early bombs are very dirty. Picked up a lot of dust and most of the dust was irradiated and caused fallout, which is very inconvenient. Plutonium, when it goes, is a white flash, and there's very little left after it. It's a clean bomb. It's positively hygienic. It vaporizes everything within its sight within a reasonable period, and you can make them about the size of a fire extinguisher. And what's more, you can make them directional. If any of you know anything about ordnance, we know that actually you can guide the direction of an explosive such that it will cut a beam at a specific angle. It's very surgical. And curiously, another coincidence, certain beams in the ground of the ground zero were cut at a very precise angle. They hadn't melted. You see, the melting point of steel is very high.
Peter, I think if you could just use the radio mic and... okay.
Yeah, sure. Do we lose anything?
No.
No? Yeah, fine. Are we good? Do you want to take this one out? Fine, okay. Right, okay. Yeah, yeah. Is that okay? If that's all right for you, Matthew, that's fine. Right, so what I'm pointing out is in these coincidences, a number of things happened. Like, for instance, the Department of Defense had a lot of money, I mean a lot of money, missing in the accounts, and there was an investigation going on, the offices of which happened to be in the Twin Towers and happened to be available to be reviewed the very next day after 9/11. Now, unfortunately, these records were obliterated. Just a strange coincidence, really. And the investigation never took place. So I'm pointing out that there's this sort of multiple win-win, that Larry was extraordinarily intuitive, that the gold was miraculously removed and never found, that the investigation into the Department of Defense accounts didn't seem to want to happen, and above all, and this is where the really sort of intriguing things happen, where your whole intelligence is challenged, that two things occurred to me that were really rather neat, is a policeman picked up a slightly charred passport just under the Twin Towers, which just happened to have the name and identification of the principal pilot of one of the aircraft that had gone in, and could identify him as obviously one of the protagonists who had achieved this amazing and terribly unfortunate incident, which appears to have been planned for at least 2 years, maybe three, because of the very, very technical things were involved. Like, for example, the aircraft taking off on their various flights, as you know, there were various aircraft involved, and being changed out in flight for other aircraft. There are waypoints. I used to fly aircraft at one time, small ones, and there are waypoints. There are roads in the sky, and you go through a various waypoint, and you change from one control zone to another control zone, and they're called waypoints, and also you do navigation, which is a bit like a threepenny bit. And as you cross from one zone to another zone, there's a kind of sometimes little sort of lapse of communication as you're handed over from one zone to another. And this gives you the opportunity on the transducer, which is the thing that's telling the ground control who you are, to have a little bit of confusion. Now, one of the aircraft that went into the Twin Towers had a very large extra fuel tank underneath it. These are not carried on commercial aircraft. They are carried on military aircraft. And when the aircraft went in, as you've, sure, you've all seen the situation, they disintegrated and things went right through the building and out the other side. And an engine went about three blocks through the momentum, because they went in at some height, and landed on a taxi. Fortunately, no one was hurt. I think the taxi was empty at the time. I know taxi drivers are fairly thick-skinned, but you know, this was fortunate. And the engine was recovered. And it's a strange coincidence that the particular style of engine, the particular make of engine, the particular model of the engine, was not one that had been used on the aircraft that allegedly were used and crashed. It was an older engine. Because if you're going to blow up an aircraft, if you're going to waste a piece of kit, you don't want to use something new. No, you get something out of the Nevada site where they keep all the old aircraft. Americans never throw anything away. They keep everything, including presidents. And what did I say? I mean, what am I implying? I like old people. I'm one myself. Anyway, moving on. So, one of the aircraft was actually seen landing at a military base, and the contents, the passengers of that aircraft were seen filing into a hangar, never to be seen again. And the strange telephone calls that were made from mobile phones would seem to relocate the position of the fact that this phone call maybe had come from the position of this hangar, not from the aircraft flying over the land, which is very difficult to make telephone calls from cell phones down to the ground. Now, all these coincidences also recur, like in the aircraft that mysteriously vanished over the Indian Ocean area. And vanished, and we have lots of theories. I mean, they're still scanning the base of the ocean there to see what happened to that. The fact that it was seen moving towards a certain American leased base in the area several miles away, several hundred miles away, is of course another pure coincidence. And the fact that one of the passengers, using his cell phone, gave some kind of cryptic message, which was GPS logged to that very strange and peculiar island, which we don't really know what it does. We live in a world which is full of illusions, full of mysteries, full of lies and deceit and information management, such that policies are produced which are very strange sometimes and have very long enduring timelines, maybe years of preparation, and very, very dubious outcomes. When I was working in intelligence, I found that a good 40% of the time was spent covering up the mistakes, covering up the things that didn't work, and giving out cover stories known as snow jobs. Basically, a lie sandwiched between two truths, or a truth sandwiched between two lies. You see, you have to have a mixture. It has to be credible. If you want the truth, or do you want a plausible lie, have the plausible lie. It's much more comfortable. The truth is uncomfortable. You don't want to have the truth. You won't necessarily sleep so well at night. See, I deal with reality, harsh, rock-bottom reality. I send up memos. They don't pay much attention these days, although As I say, I did get three letters from Boris, and I got one from Theresa May, which I really valued. She was very sweet, thanked me in the most warmest of terms. I was really appreciative of that. Certain people like me care. We care because we've been in the system for a very long time. We love this country. We really do. It's a shame that we are sometimes the puppy dog of other forces and billionaires and idiots who have policies that have little to do with humanity, little to do with you, apart from using you. And there's not a lot we can do about it. Maybe we can politically, maybe we can elect the right people at the right time. But it's no good just being in opposition and moaning about everything. You've got to be able to do things. Words are cheap. People who are in opposition or people in critique or the media can come out very easily with words. They mean nothing. They're not actually in a difficult situation at all. I'm not political. I really am not. I'm a historian. I'm an archivist. I'm an analyst. I used to be in field. Now I'm an analyst. Or I was an analyst. They don't pay me anymore. You see, I don't work for money. I don't work for money. Money is not important to me. It really is not. My family is insured that I don't have to worry about money, which gives me the license not to be mercenary. I don't give a damn whether you buy my books or not. I make nothing from them. You ought to buy my autobiography if you really want to learn some things that I can't talk about, because if I talked about them, poor old Miles wouldn't get it transmitted. It'd be deleted because it could be fake news. And you see, the beauty of this thing about fake news is that if something is not on message, it can now be called fake news. So then there is a moral obligation to take it off the airwaves because it might corrupt your pure and ethical mind and give you false information which might possibly lead you to think that our beloved and noble and wise leaders weren't quite so noble or wise or ethical as they would have you believe. Now, there are a lot of good people in management and politics and economics and universities, which are wonderful. They're very good, but they mostly get shut up. And what you get is the people have real power. And the people have real power, you probably don't even know their names, because people with real power hide behind the front of house. The front of house will take the stick, will do things stupidly. I always thought that Hancock did much better in the jungle than he did in his department. And it shocked me how, in the light of expediency, certain contracts were granted to certain people who could do them quickly. I'm not going to say any more. I think he did a magnificent job. The fact that certain advisors had serious shares in certain pharmaceutical companies was a pure coincidence. The fact that certain medical tests and findings and results clinically from certain companies who we shall not mention, but maybe are to the West, and not in Oxford, were not published because they did not support the message that you've got to get your jabs. And the man in Parliament this week has mentioned, he's been criticized for it, dare him suggest that these jabs do not do as much as they claim they do it. They don't actually seem to prevent transmissibility. Perhaps they did save 20 million lives. I'm quoting, is it the Daily Mail or the Sun? The very bastion of truth. But maybe now, in order that we keep our people safe, everybody has to be jabbed. Even children of 5 need to be jabbed because we have to be responsible. The fact, and I'm using, I think, correct data, I'm not making this up, that a certain company, whose name I shall not mention, has a production cost of $1.20. Did I mention dollars? That was a slip. And raised their jab price to $120 per jab, another slip, when it was only $30 or $60, when of course it was being jabbed mandatorily, that's the word I want, a while ago. So now, you see, you can charge $120 to be responsible. The actual MD, CEO of that company, said it was his moral responsibility to make as much company profit as possible for his shareholders. I thought he was a very, very upstanding man. Why, in this country, which has ethics, has history, 1,000 years of history, are we taking this from the colonials to our West? I'm very pro-American. The American people are wonderful. It's a pity that they have such a rotten administration. Rotten? We used to have a rotten boroughs, didn't we? Rotten borough is a term in this country where by paying a shilling, you could buy the vote of your constituents and you could put yourself in parliament. Well, that's my meaning of the word rotten. It's called gerrymongering. It means fixing the vote. And there's so much fixing goes on these days, it's very difficult to know who's won or not. And whoever hasn't won will dispute it. And then it goes to the judges. And then there'd be the sort of, you know, the flakes or the tabs or whatever they had in those days. And now we have machines and we have software and people can hack. They can change votes and what have you. So if it's possible in the democratic process, which I believe in, to actually have a big enough vote that the hacking and the tabs and the judges can't maneuver it in one particular direction, that is, I think, the way to go. It's a strange thing in the States at the moment, as you know from the recent elections, that everything is hung parliament, in effect, as we call them over here, where they have 50-50. You've got the Senate now, is 50-50. Congress is going Republican by a small margin, and they take effect from about the 1st of January, 23. Right and now, it's been Democrat. And the word Democrat is a lovely term. I would have, in 20, 30, 40 years ago, backed Democrats, because it's a nice term, isn't it? Democrat, democracy, yes. Excellent, excellent. It's a strange coincidence, is it not, that in the last week, in both houses, funny enough, they voted for, I think I want to try and get this figure right, it's a little bit mind-blowing, $859 billion defense budget, some of which, or a lot of which, could go to Ukraine. Ukraine, at the very pillar of democracy, which was changed in government in 2014, of course, for its greater good, by a bunch of armed mercenaries of foreign origin coming in and taking control. But of course, it is the pillar of democracy, and we must support it. The fact that some of the monies seem to find their way out of the United States budget into Ukraine, and for texting and for texting back to certain American elements, where of course it is put to the greater good in electing further people and their expenses, which are not inconsiderable. I think this is the way democracy should work. Don't you think? Am I prejudiced? No. Am I cynical? No. Am I British? Definitely. I believe that we invented democracy. We invented the legal system that is used in most of the world these days. I believe in fair play. I believe in honor. I am saddened by where we are now. I am devastated by the destruction of Ukraine, the people, the breadbasket of Europe that fed and would have fed not only a large part of Europe, but the third world. You cannot farm in a battlefield. The results of this terrible situation, instigated from 2014 forward by deliberate provocation, will mean a famine of biblical proportions worldwide. You, I, me, us here, we are the fortunate ones. We are the fortunate islands. We will be okay, more than okay. British people spend about 20% of their income maybe on food. In Africa, they spend about 80% of their income on food. If their prices go up by 20 or 30%, they will starve. They will starve. No amount of Oxfam, no amount of charity will save them. The Georgia Guidestones said we should reduce population, and my God, we are doing it. We are doing it by the month, and you will see it over 23 and 24. It's too far now. Sympathy won't help. Charity will be what it is. I worked for Save the Children Fund for a while. No amount of charity will save the situation. The world population, which is currently, and somebody asked me this question, 8 billion by some kind of census. They use models these days, they don't count people individually. Used to be 7.5 billion, now it's 8 billion, they say, is targeted to halve. Half, 50%, within 5 years. This is the plan. This is designed. And maybe it's a good thing. We cannot actually support 8 billion people on this mud ball. We could, if we used our resources ethically and correctly and distributed them properly without need for excessive profit. But Odessa will be shut down, has already been shut down, which is the exit port for the Ukrainian grain. And don't be misillusioned that this war in Eastern Europe is a small war. This is no small war. This is a European war. Russia at the moment, and I use real figures from the USA, satellite, 1,500 tanks, 3,000 armored vehicles, 540,000 armed men are poised on the three focal points to invade Ukraine. Ukraine has already been devastated and is imminently to be destroyed because the peace talks, which were in Turkey back in the late spring, were terminated by the West, not by Russia, who would have come to the table. And certain people in that country of Ukraine have made it illegal to speak peace. The president's wife of Ireland proposed a peace prospect in Ukraine and was criticized at all fronts because they thought they were giving in to Russia. Russia is the bear. I'm not pro-Russian. I've worked against Russia at different times. But Russia is 6 times more land area, or more than that actually, 6 times the population of Ukraine, has possibly 12 times more the ordnance, that means military equipment, and certainly the determination to defend itself. Putin, who I'm not in favor of, but Putin is 78% approved of in Russia at the present time by census, by popular thing, by popular review. I'm very off message in saying the things I'm saying here. This program may not go out because of some of the things I'm saying, but this is the difficult, harsh truth that in this first two quarters of 2023, that war will be lost to Russia. Russia will overrun Ukraine, and it will spread by virtue of economic difficulty into Poland and Romania and Moldova, can't really say that properly, and the other surrounding areas, and Germany. Germany is in very, very serious economic trouble because due to the sanctions which have, on the 1st of December, just gone, stopped Russian oil, Russian uranium, Russian gas, and a bunch of other serious metals that you need to build chips and industry and God knows what else, is running out of all of those things over the course of the first two or three quarters of 2023. America relies on Russian uranium, which it is no longer receiving, because they won't want it. They sometimes get it around the back door, like Russia is sending oil to India and China, and then it comes in from there. But it's not Indian and Chinese oil, it's Russian oil. And it's twice or three times the price of what the Germans were getting it through their pipeline, which again, by some strange coincidence, seemed to disintegrate perhaps a serious batch of sea urchins with very sharp teeth, took it upon themselves to chew through a pipe that was this big and had 14 inches of concrete around it and was designed to be so strong that you could drop the anchor of an ocean liner on it and it would not break, it would bounce off. But a section some 50 feet long seems to have been chewed by the urchins, seems to have blown up. Accidentally, of course, a very unfortunate coincidence, such that liquid gas is going to be brought in from other sources, possibly from the United States, at 3 times the price that they were getting it from Russia, except that the United States can't produce enough of it to make a difference to the German economy. And one is falling out with Saudi Arabia and the other eastern states, such that they have cut production to create a heightened price, because price is governed by the law of supply and demand. So if you have a lesser amount of product, you can improve the price. There's a lot of money involved here, a lot of money. The Middle East, America, Russia is making more money out of gas and oil than before the Ukraine war. The idea that the Russian economy is in difficulty is a myth. Their inflation is going down. Their food prices are going down. American and British and European food prices and inflation are going up. The Bank of England only the other day improved their interest rate to 3.5 basic rate, which means that with your mortgages, if you have mortgages, you will be paying considerably over that. The British house market is beginning to feel a plateau. We're going to blame Putin. We always have to have a scapegoat. It is due to Putin, but it's due to Putin having engaged in a defensive action in Ukraine, because his eastern area of, the eastern part of Ukraine had been shelled from 2014 on a kind of monthly basis. And if you were being shelled, would you simply sit there with your tin hat on and say, oh, well, that's a bit of a bad day. I wonder if we've got any bad shells coming in today. No, you'll get to a point where you'd frankly be fed up with it. I won't say pissed off. You'll get fed up with it. And when the Ukrainians were massing 60,000 troops to invade those breakaway territories, then Putin decided he would counterattack first, the point of being the preemptive strike, which is why the first thing happened on February of 2022. It wasn't a out-of-the-blue situation, because it had been planned for 2 years ahead, because he could see it coming. Anybody could see it coming. We saw it coming. Of certain people in certain places to the west were encouraging it to happen. They wanted it to happen. It was a provocation. They were pulling the bear's tail. They were sticking pins in the bear, because the object is to steal the Russian oil and gas. There was a certain American general, very well-respected general, who said there's a list of countries that we need to eliminate because they are difficult terrorists and they've got resources. And they went through, and the list went through, very Syria, Iraq, and Libya, and Afghanistan. And down the bottom was Russia. The intention is to take Russia down, to bring it back into the protection of Western economies, of Western banking systems, of Western financial methods. But it's all gone seriously wrong, because there's something called BRICS, B-R-I-C-S. And that's a union of big countries who are all using their own financial systems to trade amongst themselves. So this plan, which came down about taking down Russia, taking down China, has gone seriously wrong. Very, very seriously wrong. There was actually a Rand Corporation thesis that said that they needed to weaken Germany because Germany has always been seen as a potential competitor to the United States. And I am pro-American, as I tell you. I really am. I love the American people. I've worked there 3 times. I've actually had paid American tax. When Linda Moulton Howe said, where's your American tax certificate? I said to her, sorry, darling, that's secret. Now, let's get to some of these questions. Very, very quickly flip through them. Thank you for your questions. Some of these did involve this. Jabs. Why do we still need them? It says here. That's right. Why do we still need them? I'm not going to say anything about jabs. Some jabs are good. The Oxford jab was produced at £3 per jab, and they sold it at cost for a very, very long time. That's because we're British. Some of these questions are rather random, and they're not chronological, so I'll have to jump about. Somebody's asking me about sounds in the ears. Yes, formerly mentioned. Some of the population will be receiving high-pitched sounds in the ears. I'll tell you a story which will emphasize this. When Shoemaker Levy 9 was going into Jupiter, it was a comet, or there was a string of asteroids. It was probably a big asteroid that had broken up. And I was involved in observing that from electronically. You can tap into observatories and telescopes around the world on the internet. It's wonderful. And I was down in Devon, and it was a warm time of year. Windows were open, and we were doing all this. And we were waiting for the last, they went in over quite a few days, and the last 3 big objects which produced craters or scars on Jupiter, which are bigger than the size of the Earth itself, we'd observed that. And I went to bed with the windows open. And at 3 in the morning or thereabouts, I was hauled out through the window by certain methods, which was quite interesting, if slightly scary, and had a conversation, and had a bit of surgery, which gets to another question, here's why am I chipped, and I was chipped, and I lost the hearing in my left ear, gone, nothing, but I had sounds, high-pitched dolphin-like sounds. I thought, this is bloody scary, but difficult, and I went to see the quack, and the quack sent me to hospital, and they did all these various tests, and they said, well, your ear's all right, but something's gone in between the ear, nerve, and the brain. You've got some sort of interruption there between there, and they'd been blooding my ear in the morning when I'd woken up. And I got sounds. Now, in Devon, you have lanes, and the roads around here are brilliant compared to Devon. Lanes, you have high hedges, you have a single track, you have sharp corners, and often you get tractors and all kinds of heavy vehicles coming your way. I found, after this coincidence, that when I was driving, and I get a very strong bleeping sound in my left ear, and I learnt to pull over in a lay-by or a passing place, because within seconds, a tanker or something would come whizzing around that corner. So I was getting radar of some kind. I was getting some kind of defense mechanism to tell me, hey, better pull over. Other people will have these things. If you get these sounds, try to interpret them. They're not language, they're signals. Some of them are tinnitus. I know about tinnitus. This is not tinnitus. Okay, let's move on. What's another one here? Intergalactic wars. I hate these generalized terms. People use things like galaxies and Andromeda and what have you. Have you any idea the scale of what you're talking about? I mean, you're living in the Milky Way galaxy. You're living in an arm of the Milky Way galaxy which spirals around. You are number 129 in the Pleiadian spiral. You see the seven sisters out there. There are several, many light years between them. They're not all together. You're looking down the arm, and the ones further down you can't really see clearly because they're further away. And the number of stars in the galaxy, this galaxy, is huge. You cannot imagine how many stars are in this galaxy. When someone says, oh, I'm from Andromeda, I mean, it doesn't mean anything. It means absolutely nothing, because that's another million, a million, a million of stars. It's like giving you, if I said to you, you know, your coordinates are 52-19 west, 43-19, you know, something east, you would have no idea. You would have, it's a meaningless figure. If you were a navigator on a boat, you might know, oh, that's, I know where that is. But my point is, you mustn't use these huge generalized terms. Intergalactic worlds, what does that mean? Please, galaxies don't fight each other. If you look out in the cosmos, you'll find that there are voids. They're not real voids, but there are voids where there's fewer stars. And there's other areas where there's great densities of stars. There's strings. There are currents of plasma. And there are transmitting energies. Huge energies, and the stars talk to each other. Like in a forest, there's the fungal underlie in a forest where the trees are talking to each other through these chemical messages of the fungi. And in the universe, this local universe, let's talk about that, because to go to any other is more complicated, you have communication by plasma and energies and scalar waves, which are instant. They don't travel at the speed of light. There is no speed. They are instant. Psychic, paranormal, functional, telepathic abilities are instant. They do not travel at the speed of light. I spent a whole year with Edgar Mitchell in his office in Florida. He's not with us anymore. I was with him when he was being attacked by the administration because he was off message. He didn't believe in Star Wars. He thought it was a very irresponsible thing to do. And the Reagan administration brought in the concept of Star Wars.
And dear Edgar was vocal in working against that, and they basically destroyed his career, destroyed his family. I was with him at that time. He's no longer with us, but a noble man, very, very brilliant man. And what we discovered, he told me all about his moon missions. He said, we weren't ready. We weren't ready for what we discovered. And you weren't told. Various people have leaked various things. Buzz has leaked various things and what have you. The moon is inhabited. Sounds daft, doesn't it? You look up there, it looks like a desert. The views that you're given from NASA looks like a desert, is a desert. There's a lot of people on the moon. There's some of you people on the moon. Not that many. 5,000 or 6,000, it's not much. Nothing compared to 8 billion, is it? Arcturus. Going to have a look at Arcturus and various other places. Domes, blue light. They come down and they get a lot of water from you. Picking up fresh water from the Earth is a very common function of UAPs. I use the modern term. And they keep tabs on you. Go back to where we were this morning. The Welsh Triangle. SOAS. The underwater submarine surveillance system, hydrophones out in the Atlantic. You listen to the prop noise of submarines and ships, and everyone is different. It's like a signature. And you can plot the passage of a submarine. You hopefully pick it up if it's a Russian submarine coming out of the Arctic, and you plot it, and you keep tabs on it, and you triangulate it. And if you're very clever and it's near a phone, you can actually hear Russian. That's why, if you probably notice on your films, if any submarine is under attack, everyone has to be very quiet. Because if the cook drops a pan on the floor, it goes off out through the water and carries a very long way and identifies that you're there. Nuclear submarines are quite noisy. The modern ones are quieter, but diesel submarines are quieter than nuclear submarines. I know a lot about submarines. And in Shag Harbour, if that means anything to you over there, Greenland, and they had some Brides Bay, the cables come ashore from the hydrophones, which are all over the North Atlantic. And you plot by triangulation from three microphones these signals. And you keep tabs. Well, now it's an oceanographic system. It's moved on from where that was then. They have towed arrays behind ships, which are a couple of miles of sensors, and they have more sensitive systems and satellite systems. So the St. Bride's Bay system at Broady was closed down. I was personally I was personally responsible for closing it down, because we wrote that the Welsh Triangle. And it brought a lot of attention on the secret secret American oceanographic research station, which of course was just the listening station. All the Americans had to walk around in civilian clothes, and they weren't allowed to buy American cars. And if they got a parking ticket, they got shipped back to Virginia. It was rather amusing. And because I'd been sent down there to do a double task of writing this book for Granada, which was the first book in 1979 when it was published, and also I was reporting back to the Americans on what was going on. Five, thank you. That was very interesting. We had contact with the Nordics, and they could get into the base with their methods, and they could fiddle about with the computers, and I even took pictures of them. I don't know what we've been up to. If you want to know all this stuff, buy my books. I can't cover it all. Secret Life of a Spook, it's on Amazon. Quickly, questions. CERN, yes. Now, I worked for Birmingham University, and we used to interpret the data from CERN, chasing meson in bubble chambers. I didn't work in Switzerland. What do I make of Atlantis? Well, Atlantis existed, didn't it? Along with Mu and the others, a great civilization. The early civilization was very megalithic, used natural things. If you look at the monuments, the boxes, as I call them, they're very, very precise. They're within one or two microns. The actual laser cut was that precise. The boreholes. That got all swept away, and I mean the word swept away, in the Great Flood, which is in all traditions, which took a huge amount of water and slurry over large parts of the Earth. The Earth moved on its axis slightly. That could have been a, how can I put it, military action from off-world. You have been in a war zone. Mars, death on Mars. Mars was destroyed. The Earth was radically impacted at that time. Quickly run through these. How do we know it's 8 billion? We don't know. It's just a survey. Dumbs, deep underground military bases. Yeah, they've built all kinds of defensive mechanisms. There's the important ones like the seed banks up in the ice, just in case you're stupid enough to blow yourself up, which I've been trying to stop you doing for a long time, and hopefully such would successfully. Are we droids, meaning human beings? Blah, blah, blah. Well, sort of, yes. Some of you don't have souls. It was a great debate, wasn't it? It was a terrible thing when people went to Australia and the Christian church declared that Aborigines didn't have souls and therefore they were vermin. There was actually a head price on Aborigines at one time. Some people don't have souls, some people have group souls. What is a soul? A soul is an we're running on time. A soul is an electromagnetic, etheric energy, which is your being. And it resides mostly in sort of your auric, etheric area. And in the course of which gets back to why are we here, a couple of questions, why are we here? You are here to evolve personally. This is your responsibility, not mine. And my responsibility is to stop you blowing yourself up. And I mean it. I'm not looking after you. I'm looking after the planet, the biosphere. Because after the generations and generations and generations, we need this place. You're not going to destroy it. Oh, no, I'm sorry. We have the right to intercede. That's why we have patrols in exotic vacuum objects that are around on every single nuclear facility on this planet of a military nature and can cancel it like that. Like that. Turn it to pure iron. It doesn't work. But we do allow you to actually run experiments and to have tactical situations and to use ordinary ordnance weapons, like in Ukraine. 20,000 shells from the Russians every single day, 6,000 from the Ukrainians going the other way. It's awesome. This is not a civil war. This is a European war. It must be contained. It must be worked towards peace, whatever that means. Someone's got to pay for it to be rebuilt. It won't be the Russians. Don't think they're going to pay for it. It will become a no man's land. The danger, and I'll close on this, I know we're running out of time. The danger to you people, and Europe specifically, not you, in the Falkland Islands, is 8 million Ukrainians are likely to leave Ukraine and move west in the next 6 months because they have no power, they have no heat. It's a living hell. And this is the kind of war that has been engineered over the decades. The Second World War was engineered. The First World War was engineered. The Crimea War was engineered. They are not happenstance. They are deliberately created because they make a huge amount of money for people who have no soul. And we are not allowed to stop them. They have the freedom, the right of self-determination. God help them. Thank you. Good night.